right, welcome to another edition of Brewski Head Radio, right here at We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett. I do this show every weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, same time, same channel, 2 to 4 p.m. Central, right here on WEPRN.com. Well, I do try to bring on guests that you're not going to hear too often on places like National Public Radio, Fox Radio, and those kind of so-called radio networks, or I guess you'd call them propaganda networks. I'm trying to find people who think outside the box. They don't all think alike. And they don't all even think like me. But they're all people who are outside the matrix, one way or another, looking in and telling us what's really going on in there and how much better it is outside. My guest today is somebody that everybody listening to me who's part of the 9/11 Truth Movement, and I know quite a few of my listeners are, one way or another, probably knows of, although folks who've come to this issue in the relatively recent past may not be as familiar with him as those of us who were on board in 2004, 2005 are, because that was when my guest was most active, and boy, talk about active. You know, you talk about, well, who's really been up in the front lines pushing the boundaries and getting in the faces of the powers that be and making noise for 9/11 truth, helping spread the truth about that terrible day? I guess at the top of the list you might put somebody like, David Ray Griffin, whose books are an indispensable resource on this issue. But pretty close to the top, you'd have to put my guest today, Jimmy Walter. Jimmy spent more than $5 million of his own money on this cause. He helped distribute, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I believe it's more than 1 million DVDs. He got them sent to all the journalists in Europe, and he organized a terrific conference in New York. I believe that was in 2005, one of the earliest 9/11 Truth events, which then was made into a very professional DVD, then distributed to so many people. And I think this had an enormous impact. Likewise, he did take out full-page ads in some newspapers, including the New York Times, I think also the Washington Post, if memory serves. And the upshot of all this was, well, we didn't nail the bad guys, but we certainly got the ball rolling with that kind of activity. Now, Jimmy Walter is not only somebody who knows his 9/11, but he also knows his money issues. So Jimmy's a great guy to be talking to as the U.S. enters what could be the beginning of the terminal phase of its financial crisis, as the bankers push through their $700 billion billionaire banker bailout bill. And people are asking, is this a coup d'etat? Is this going to institute a new kind of fascism in the USA, where the government and the money power are working together in a kind of a dictatorship? Well, who knows? Is it going to actually stabilize the situation financially? Or is it going to actually make things worse? Is it going to hasten the demise of this financial empire based in the city of New York and the city of London? What kind of world will we have when we come out the other end of this thing? Again, Jimmy Walter is a good guy to talk to about this. He's not just a 9/11 truth advocate, not just somebody who knows the money issues, but he's also a visionary philanthropist who has been thinking about what it would take to create a good and sustainable society. He's the guiding light behind Walden3.org. Now, the Walden 3 Project is some people might call it utopian, but these days, anything survivable is probably going to sound utopian. It's an engineering model of a super-efficient, car-free, sustainable city using recycling, permaculture, cogeneration, pollution-free factories to manufacture what its citizens consume. So we're talking about a sustainable city. What a concept. That's a new one because traditionally cities have not been sustainable. Quite the opposite. The city has always been the sort of the great maw consuming the resources of the countryside and spewing out its waste. So-called civilization is, in one sense, really the sort of a metastasis of cities, which appeared when somebody figured out how to create an army of thugs to go out and raid the peasantry and steal the excess food production from the countryside and maybe capture some more slaves to put in the army, build a bigger army of thugs, go out and steal more stuff from the countryside, hire some scribes to create a tax code, which is just a bunch of writing telling how much they're supposed to steal and how they're supposed to steal it. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon you've got so-called civilization. And naturally, that means that the city is the, it's not a sustainable kind of a way of living. It's quite the opposite. It's a parasitical kind of phenomenon that has gotten larger and larger and larger and larger over time until we reach this point where we're now nearing the possibility of the first ever global empire run by the descendants of those first psychopaths who started the ball rolling by creating these armies of thugs to go out and steal the surplus from the countryside. They like to create a whole planet run this way as their own private plantation. But if we're going to stop them, we're going to have to think not only in terms of just resistance, but also in terms of what kind of society would be sustainable and would be a good society. And Jimmy Walter's Walden 3 project, I think, is a good example of that. We are waiting to get Jimmy Walter on the line. I'm hoping that the control room here at We the People will have him up pretty soon. I do have my screen, and I don't see him up there. Let me just check and see if he somehow snuck on. Jimmy, you're not there yet, are you? Hello, Jimmy? Nope, not yet. Okay, so we'll just keep waiting a little bit. Hopefully we'll get hold of him. Jimmy is living abroad. He was chased out of the country, more or less, by threats from... Talk about armies of thugs. Now, the thugs that did the 9/11 inside job and their helpers were quite nasty, especially back in the relatively early period of the 9/11 truth movement when it was new. And nobody really knew, you know, what they would do to us if we spoke out and we organized on this issue. And indeed, some people did get some pretty bad, rough treatment, including Jimmy Walter, who has been living outside the U.S., due to the threats and harassment that he received as his wages for taking interest in the future of his country and trying to do something for the world. So I forget exactly which country he's in, but we'll find out when we get him on the line. Meanwhile, we do have a caller. It's Richard calling in from Texas. So let's bring Richard on the line. Hello, Richard. How you doing?
Hi, Kevin. I'm doing okay, all things considered.
That's good to hear.
Wanted to touch base with you about the bailout thing, and in particular, take advantage of your knowledge of the Quran and the Islam faith. One of the things that I've been trying to get people to look at is Jesus throwing the money changers out of the temple as his only real display of anger and, a semi-violent approach to a situation. And I was just curious if what there may be within Islam that may speak to the evils of usury and that kind of thing.
Oh, that's a great question. It's true. That was really the only time Jesus ever used any force, was throwing those money changers out of the temple. And in Islam, we also have a very, very strong tradition against usury. And I think even more than in Christianity, that tradition is still alive today. Today, many Christians don't really even seem to notice that their religion prohibits loans at interest.
Exactly.
Whereas Right, a lot of Muslims. I would say the majority of the world's Muslims at least realize this. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all necessarily obeying it, but in fact, there are still a lot of people that do avoid any kind of interest in the Islamic world. For instance, my father-in-law in Morocco is one of these people who's really gone out of his way to avoid interest banking, and there are a lot of other people there that I've met who also do that. And, you know, I think this is one reason for the war on Islam, because the culture really resists this kind of New World Order takeover. You know, people, they don't want to work in large enterprises, in big hierarchies. Everybody wants to be a kind of independent producer or seller, and nobody wants to deal with interest. And this just makes it impossible for the powers that be to impose their financial model on the Islamic world. So I think that's one reason for this. You know, this demonizing of Islam and these attacks on Islamic countries, because it's just resisting the New World Order takeover.
That's very interesting. I didn't really appreciate all that about Islam, although I'm not surprised. Of curiosity along those same lines is, the Jewish faith, the Talmud, and all that stuff. And I'm curious if you know whether usury is spoken to within any of the standard Jewish, theological documents or what?
Well, I don't know a whole lot about Judaism. I know a little bit about some of the mystical traditions of Judaism. But what I have heard is that in Judaism, lending at interest or usury is also a banned. But at some point, the Jewish scholars decided that, well, it would be okay to lend an interest to non-Jews, but lending to Jews would have to be without interest. So that became the official position, I don't know how long ago, maybe 1,000 years ago. And that supposedly had a lot to do with why the banking networks that grew up in Europe had quite a high level of Jewish participation, because Jews were the only people whose tradition authorized them to lend at interest. And so when the world moved towards an interest-based model of banking, these Jewish communities were in a position to sort of move into the forefront of that.
That's interesting that you mentioned that. And, of course, we've got a strong Jewish influence in the banking system over here as well. One of the things that I've encountered as a school of thought recently is sort of the diaspora concept was almost the Jews were forced to spread out among the rest of the non-Jewish world, because that was the only place that they could go out and conduct their usury business without cannibalizing one another and being in violation of their doctrines.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't know if I would go quite that far, you know, as far as what caused the diaspora to happen the way it did. Who knows? But it definitely, the Jewish diaspora did become a kind of a trade network with a lot of concentration on finance and banking. That's all true. I think that, you know, that may have been one reason for the anti-Jewish prejudices that grew up in Europe, because people saw Jews as, well, you know, quickly, you know, getting richer than the local people thanks to their participation in this international network. They sort of got the impression that Jews were more loyal to their own group than they were to the local country that they were in, and those factors led to prejudice.
Hello?
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 It sounds like Jimmy Walker, maybe, there.
Is that Jimmy?
That's Jimmy Walker.
Hey, welcome, Jimmy. Glad to have you. How you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. We were just talking about the religious prohibitions on usury and related topics with Richard from Texas while we were waiting to get you on the line. Is that something that you can offer a word on during this minute and a half before our first break?
On usury? It's prohibited. It was prohibited in the for Christians as well. But it's not for the Jews, so the Jews could loan the money. And but the Jews were persecuted everywhere. They always had to leave at a moment's notice. So instead of investing in the local economy, they put everything into money and jewelry so that they'd be portable. We the Christians created the phenomena. Any hatred they have towards the Jews actually started by the Christians because the Jews had to do their business, their economics, to be able to leave at a moment's notice. And so they didn't put a lot of money into the local economy or the local people because they knew they'd be kicked out.
And good point. And not only kicked out, but often the rulers would try to grab some of that wealth before the Jews could get out of town.
Or burn them at the stake.
Right. Yeah, there's quite a history of religious intolerance in Christianity, which is kind of strange, given that Jesus was, such a preacher of peace and healing and a turn-the-other-cheek kind of guy. But, the world's full of paradoxes. We'll be back. We're already at our first break. We do have our very special guest, Jimmy Walker, on the line. And we'll be back with him. And Richard from Texas, you're welcome to hang on. We will return in just a moment.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back to Truth Jihad Radio, right here on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett. Today I'm talking with Jimmy Walter. He's a 9/11 truth hero, spent more than $5 million of his own money promoting the truth about 9/11 or the search for truth back when it was highly unfashionable, even quite a bit more so than it is now. He took a lot of heat, including some very serious and nasty harassment, threats and so on. He's had to basically live in exile ever since. I think he'll go down as one of the heroes of our time eventually when we start straightening out our history books. And Jimmy is a great guy to have on the line with us right now because not only is he well-versed in politics, the true political situation, but also he knows his money issues as well. Jimmy Walter has extensive experience in starting and operating small businesses. He has a broad knowledge of financial markets, and he also is, as I said earlier, a visionary philanthropist who has been thinking long and hard about how to create a truly good, sustainable society. In particular, his Walden3.org is a project devoted to that. So Jimmy's a wonderful person to get to talk to. We're lucky to have him on for 2 hours today, and we were just talking about finance by way of the history of usury and prohibitions against usury with Richard from Texas, and that leads us straight into the situation that we're facing here in the U.S. right now, this financial meltdown and $700 billion banker bailout bill and trillions of dollars in liquidity being pumped into the markets by the Fed. Jimmy, what's your take on this situation? Is this banker bailout bill as biggest scam as it looks like to me, and are we going to be stabilizing or sliding down the slippery slope in the near future?
Well, I mean, it's as bad or worse than you think. The fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter is, it does nothing for the U.S. economy. It does nothing to stimulate the economy. A lot of the money will go to Europe. Paulson threatened to veto the bill, had to be vetoed if European banks were excluded. If you look at actually what's been happening to the economy, we had the employment report out, was worse than expected. ISMX fell from 49 to 43, the lowest point since 2001. the U.S. economy is not going to be helped by this at all. The banks will be helped. And it's really a crime. Now, what they're doing here, and I always like to look at exactly the language. They said, okay, we're going to limit the golden parachutes of the bankers. Why the hell should they get any parachute at all? These people should be sent to jail. They should be stripped of their money. What about all the bonuses they took from years past? Those should be refunded. I'm totally outraged.
Yeah, these bankers are just kind of sitting between us and the creation of currency, and they're skimming off a tremendous amount of the currency that gets created. Wouldn't it be simpler to just nationalize the Fed and print the money directly?
Well, first of all, I agree totally with nationalizing the Fed, but the $700 billion should be being used under the Swedish plan, where the government gets equity in these banks, not just gives them the money. As we're doing it now, the U.S. taxpayer gets not one red dime, not one share of stock in any of these corporations or banks that they're bailing out. Whereas under the Swedish plan, we would get equity. But, of course, equity in the banks is anathema to the people in Washington right now. They can't see that. Of course, the homeowners don't get any relief from this at all. These packages, once the Fed gets them, or not the Fed, the U.S. government gets them, then all of these mortgages are going to be dumped on the market or held off the market. One way or the other, there's going to be a heck of a lot of homes out there that nobody wants to buy, and it's going to continue to depress the market. So the only bright thing in this whole thing was the FDIC insurance people being raised for their guarantees. But since they're bailing out the banks, that means nothing anyway. If the banks fail, the FDIC would have to come in. But since the banks are being bailed out by the Fed, raising the FDIC helps nobody at all.
So wouldn't it just be a lot easier to bail out the homeowners rather than the banks? I mean, wouldn't that actually help the economy more?
Hear, hear.
Well, I would say bail out the homeowners. But you got two or three classes of homeowners here. You've got a bunch of people who bought homes that had no assets, who went in and lied, liar's mortgages, I think they call them. Those people, of course, should not be helped. But you have the other people now who went in and got adjustable rate mortgages, who ended up not being able to pay for them, and now with the drop in housing prices, they have a big problem in making their mortgage, making their payments, and even if they do, the house is worth less than the mortgage at today's rates. These are the kind of people that should be helped out.
Jimmy, you've been in the real estate business for a long time. I heard that the Fed is even going to have the authority to forcibly adjust the principal on these mortgages that are involved here. And, of course, that's government intervention at a new high as well.
Well, I mean, I'm like everybody else, I want the least government that's necessary, but the fact of the matter is that the reason we have this problem is there was no government oversight of the banking industry. These guys, and now with all this consolidation, the banks that remain are going to be even more powerful. They're going to have more influence over us, and they're totally without conscience, as we've seen. Somebody has to regulate these banks. And so while I don't want the government in my bedroom, I don't want the government going over small businesses, I think for these monster-sized international corporations and banks, there has to be government oversight. The lack of government oversight is what got us here. But I want to bring up one other thing. Nobody is talking about the guy who started and caused this, Alan Greenspan. This guy should be arrested and put in jail. Instead, they're trying to take advice from this guy. Alan Greenspan is the man who caused this problem.
Bill Graham should share a cell with him.
I'd vote for that, too. I'd vote for that, too. In fact, there's a lot of people. George Bush, of course, should be there as well. But again, I mean,
Greenspan saw this coming. I mean, was this engineered precisely so the big banks could swallow up their competition and get even bigger?
Well, periodically this happens. The fact of the matter is Alan Greenspan was an Ayn Rand accolade who wanted to destroy all Social Security, all Medicare, all Medicaid programs in the United States. And the way he saw to do that was to bankrupt the government. Right now, under these type of plans, we're going to get loans, we're going to be under the IMF rules. The IMF rules are going to come into play.
That was his plan.
We are bankrupt.
He did brilliantly. That's right. Well, so I guess, it wasn't such a botched job after all. He got what he was looking for. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. We're talking with Jimmy Walter. He's at jimmywalter.com. Y'all return.
Get up, stand up. We the People Radio Network.
Stand up for your rights.
You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
I told you before, stay away from my door. Don't give me that brother. The police on the phone won't leave me alone.
Welcome back to the Truth Be Had radio show, right here on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett, on the web at barrettforcongress.us. And today I'm talking with Jimmy Walter of jimmywalter.com, the visionary philanthropist who really kick-started the 9/11 truth movement a couple of years ago. Without that kickstart, who knows whether we'd even have the kind of movement that we have today. And we're talking about the $700 billion banker bailout bill topics along those lines. And Jimmy, I actually, even though I'm running as a libertarian for Congress, I agree with you completely that we need to regulate the biggest businesses and banks. I think libertarians have really made a mistake when they've gotten this impression that the federal government itself is the only big government entity that they have to worry about. Actually, the biggest corporations and banks become a secret government that's far more powerful than the democratically elected government, and many times it's more dangerous as well. So we need to have antitrust enforcement and other forms of regulation to keep the biggest players under control and to keep a level playing field. So that's one of the areas I'm an unorthodox libertarian.
Well, I think the libertarian philosophy is based upon real competition, and these large banks have been don't have real competition, and with the antitrust laws haven't been enforced at all, and you need to have these things broken up. But since you got me on here for finance, I'd like to talk about a couple things. One is the dollar. The dollar has been getting stronger in this crisis, which is so counterintuitive, it boggles the mind. With the Fed pumping all this money into the credit markets, which is far more than the $700 billion that they're talking about, the Fed has put over $900 billion in. The dollar and the trade deficit, the way it is still and everything else, you would think the dollar would be very weak. Well, the reason it's not is all of the European banks are having to buy dollars to cover their bad mortgages that they hold. And so they're forced to use the euro-dollar swaps. So this current dollar-euro exchange rate is totally artificial and totally temporary. So if anybody is looking for a good play, watch the market. Don't buy until it starts to turn. But when it starts to turn, the dollar is right now, it's about $1.38 to the euro. It could go to $1.50 easily. It's already been $1.50 once, and I think it'll go to $2 to the euro.
How soon?
The other thing I'd like to talk to you about is gold. We're coming into 85% of all gold produced goes into jewelry. 85% of all jewelry is sold at Christmas. We're coming into that market. The Indian, not the American Indian, the Indian, buyers start next Wednesday buying for the Christmas season. It's not Christmas, then the holiday season. So we're going into a period in which gold has a very good chance to go on up past 1,000 this time. 1,000 is a hard one to get past because it's a psychological point. But I think it's 850-ish today. I found as far as 825. I think they closed about 838. You got a good play up to 1,000. You have 15. That's 15 points. So that's about 20% gain you could be making on gold. So I would be looking at gold. I would be looking at buying euros or francs or even yen. I don't like the yen so much because the yen is so dependent. The Japanese economy is so dependent on the American economy, and the American economy is just, I can't tell you how bad it is. It's like we lost 495,000 jobs in the last report. We got the ISM index went through the floor, and it's not just a crisis. We've been losing jobs for 8 months, and this bailout is not going to help. Former Treasury Secretary O'Neill said that the whole program, the $700 billion bailout, is crazy. It's not going to help us. It's not going to do anything for us. So let's see. The ISM index 49 to 43, the lowest point since 2001, the awful period right after 9/11. So at any rate, there's some.
This was sort of a financial 9/11 that they hit us with this time. It was almost right on the 11th that this crisis was manufactured.
Well, that's interesting. I got to go back and check the Illuminati numbers because they like to pick certain numbers. But the fact of the matter is there was no emergency. They've done the same thing here that they did with the Patriot Act. They did the same thing here what they did with the war in Iraq. They come up, they fire, the sky is falling. And then the mainstream media is the real culprit here because they pumped this awful thing until it became awful. Even Paul Krugman, who writes the New York Times, who I admire, 3 days ago he said, oh, the bailout program is terrible, don't do it. And then yesterday before they voted, he said, yes, go ahead and vote for the bailout program. So the extent of their control over the media and the extent of the media control over the people and the people who call in is criminal. Rupert Murdoch should be in that cell next to all of these guys, too.
You know, in this kind of situation where the accurate information is just not there in the mainstream, you would think that those of us looking, from outside the mainstream would be in a position to do well in markets just because, when most people have such bad information, the people with better information should have a big advantage.
Well, I mean, if you were buying puts or selling short, you made a lot of money in the last 2 months. Actually, it started right. January 1. It's been up and down, but it's been coming down since January 1. And so I've been shorting the market. I'm not doing too bad.
I believe it. Well, that's good to hear. You need to make back some of those millions you spent on 9/11 truth. If there's any justice in the world, Allah will bless you with more than you can. We do have a caller. It's Mark from Houston. He's been waiting patiently. Let's go ahead and bring him on. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hi, guys. You hear me okay?
Coming through loud and clear.
Okay. Hey, Jimmy Walter, very pleased to have you today. I want to let you know that you're definitely one of my heroes. Thank you so much for what you've done. Jimmy, what I wanted to talk to you about was, I have been looking at this for a long time and came to the conclusion that due to the mass consciousness and the financial matters and the control matters, 9/11, financial 9/11, everything else, I've developed a vision for a small, sustainable community. And it just seems to me that that's the way to go. I know you have some ideas along those lines. And so I tried repeatedly again and again to get something going and just haven't been able to and haven't joined anything. And so I know you kind of think along those lines, so I just sent you something through your website regarding that. I'm in Texas, and so I just kind of think that's the way to go if you can, is just to basically to the countryside, you know, possibly even out of the U.S. Out of the U.S. would probably be much better. So I don't have a lot of other thoughts other than that. Perhaps you could respond to my email. I've tried many times. In regard to financial matters, I was able to find one bank, Everbank, where I could hold money in foreign currencies and do something with gold. I'm doing it that way. That's a good resource for anybody out there. And then other than that, we knew there was going to be another 9/11, so it turns out that it's a financial 9/11, threatening us with worse. And other than that, I don't have my thoughts all together, but I just wanted to thank you for your work. Both you guys. I love you guys. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to hear some encouragement. You know, sometimes it gets kind of lonely doing this kind of thing. So good to hear that encouragement.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to make one comment on the communities, the independent communities. True economic wealth comes from manufacturing. The biggest underlying problem the United States has now is we've shipped all our factories overseas. The only thing that was left here was really the financial industry, and now that is in tatters. Now, these sustainable communities, you're going out and trying to do these things, you're going to always end up being poor. Because you're not manufacturing. You're not being able to multiply your labor so that one man can create what it took 10 men to create before.
Excellent. We'll pick it up when we come back after the break. This is Kevin Barrett with Jimmy Walter on Truth Jihad Radio. Stick around.
Online and on demand. This is We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is the Truth Jihad Radio Show on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm talking today with Jimmy Walter, the visionary philanthropist who put his money where his mouth is for 9/11 Truth and probably did as much for that cause as anybody ever has. We're now talking about financial issues, and Jimmy, you were just saying that manufacturing is the source of real wealth, that the U.S. Shipped its manufacturing overseas starting in, I guess, about the beginning of the 90s and impoverished itself, leaving nothing but a green paper industry. It's deluging the world with green paper. How can we get around that? You said that alternative communities can't get wealthy because they don't have any manufacturing base. What's the solution then?
Well, you need a critical mass. You need enough people in working together that you can have factories on my website, walden3.org, that's Walden, the number 3.org, we have under a thing called the project, and in the project we have a scalable community for 100,000 people to 1 million people that has the furniture, the food, the manufacturing of iron, the steel, everything that you need to survive. And you would have to come together, and then when you get to that point, the whole point of communities to grow wealthier have to replace imports by making them themselves. And when you get to the point where you're using efficient energy, efficient farming, efficient layout of the city, so you're not wasting resources and traffic jams and stuff like that, where you have efficient mass transportation, all of a sudden people don't have to work as much. Right now, you spend half your time riding around in your free automobile. That's like being free to ride a horse. It's not going to help you. So what we really need to do is to come together and have sensible communities where the people participate in it, where people are forced to learn what's going on in the community, that they don't just sit around all day watching sports or porno or fashion shows or soap operas or whatnot. You go out there and get involved in the community. The problem in the United States today is everybody wants it handed to them on a silver platter. They want to go in like a Chinese restaurant and say, I want a column A or column B or column C, and have it handed to them. It doesn't work that way. People got to get out. They got to read books on economics. They got to go out there and get involved with who is put up to run for office, way back where it matters. They've got to spend, they got 30 minutes watching the entertainment news. A newstainment is not going to do it because those people aren't interested in educating them at all. The whole fact of the matter is that this democracy is failing because the people aren't interested and they don't go out and they do anything about the democracy. They spend all of their time in mental masturbation or whatever distracts them from paying attention to the things that really count. But I'd like to come back to Mr. O'Neill. Mr. O'Neill, on the financial end of this problem, has the best idea that I've heard of. And he would start with a discounted cash flow analysis of the distressed instruments that are clogging the system. The government.
Paul O'Neill? Is Paul O'Neill the former Treasury Secretary?
Yeah, the guy was fired.
Right. The truth teller, the defector.
Yeah, that's right. Don't tell the truth in this administration. It'll get you fired. But what he would do is guarantee the assets, paring back the support as the principal and interest payments were made. That would take care of the liquidity problem because the government guarantee a specific level, they should trade like cash then, rather than the government buying all the instruments and then being stuck with them. At any rate, O'Neill has some decent things to say. One of the guys I read a lot, I go to Kitco, KITCO.com, and I read a guy named Chuck Butler, who has things called the Daily Finic, and he is really on top of all the stuff. He's been predicting a lot of this stuff ahead of time. He's marginal, not marginal in ability, but he only touches on gold. Currencies are his big thing, and also what's happening in the government. Paul Krugman.
So I'll have to have Chuck Butler on as a guest sometime. Sounds like a good guy.
He's a good guy. I think you'll hit it off with him very well. Now back to also to Paul Krugman. Krugman was the one calling the bailout cash for trash, and he's now said we're on the edge of the abyss, and this whole financial thing, I think, it has been overblown, and I'm a little disappointed in Krugman for saying this. Cutting off the cash would hurt some of the businesses, but the real problem is, as we touched on before, we've shipped the factories overseas, we've been losing jobs over and over again because we really don't have anything in this country left, or your country left, except McDonald's, Burger King, and Walmart. And the jobs for those places are penny ante. When you fire a worker, you fire a customer. When the workers get low pages, your customers have a little bit of money to spend. And this is the big problem. Even now, the financial industry is shedding jobs like a dog shaking his coat full of water. All of these high-priced jobs are just going away. And it's going to affect the whole world. Europe still sells all their high-priced cars to America. Well, there isn't going to be anybody to buy those high-priced cars here anymore. So people here in Europe have been saying, oh, it's not going to affect us. Well, now I've been saying you're crazy. The United States economy is 30% of the world economy. If you take 30% of the world's economy away, everybody else gets hurt too. And so they're starting to see problems here in the financial assets. But on that same token on the toxic mortgages, the Bank of England, the banks in England, the banks in Spain, and the banks in Italy were all doing exactly the same thing the Fed was doing in the United States. And they had the same type of real estate bubbles. So those real estate bubbles are all bursting, and people are just in general pulling back. What we have now is fear feeding on fear. And it's not, doesn't look good. It doesn't look good at all.
So you see a possible global depression coming.
Well, I definitely see a depression coming for the United States, England, Spain, Italy, and Japan. China and Russia may be insulated. China may be insulated because their economy, and India also, because their economies have become spontaneously combusted, become self-sustaining. They have enough internal customers to buy up what the United States doesn't buy. So, and the China has not been into letting the IMF impoverish it as the IMF did to almost every country it helps. As it did to Southeast Asia, as it did to South America, et cetera. South America also seems to be, again, within it, South America buying and selling their own goods, so they're not going to be as affected as much, and they have their own oil. Russia, of course, is swimming in oil, and they're going to continue to be able to sell their oil and gas to Europe, and now they're building a pipeline to China. It looks pretty good for those, but what I'm still scared of is the Hitler-Poland effect, and that is that everything's so bad here that in order to cover it up, they're going to start another war somewhere, possibly even with Russia. As you may or may not know, Hitler invaded Poland because his economy was crashing. He did not want to go to war at that time. But in order to distract his own people from its crashing economy, he went to war because he had to have another victory so that everyone would think he was good. We have very similar things happening here. This financial bailout is not going to save the economy. And I don't think it's going to stop inflation. I think we're going to have stagflation. As we have stagnation of the economy, but inflation continues to go because the Chinese, the Indians, the Europeans are going to continue to buy not the oils diminishing so much, but the other natural resources.
Okay, well, I think that sounds pretty accurate based on what I know about these matters. We do have a caller. We weren't able to get to this segment, but that's Bill. We'll get to Bill after this very, very short break. This is Kevin Barrett on the web at barrettforcongress.us, talking with Jimmy Walter of jimmywalter.com. We'll be back after the break for more talking. Again, this is a very short break, so sure, and stick around.